Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet. Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 26, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our featured guest this evening is Tyrell Ventura, whom many of you have seen on Conspiracy Theory with his father, Jesse. Working both behind and in front of the camera, Tyrell has had a diverse and fascinating path in the entertainment industry, which has led him to write, produce, and direct numerous short films, television commercials, and independent feature films, including Bluebird, Border, and his current release, The Wanderers. Tonight, we'll be talking about his work on Conspiracy Theory, which can be seen on True TV or the website, which is truetv.com. And you can tell that Tyrell shares his father's revolutionary spirit and search for truth. He'll be joining us right after the Starseed news at the top of the show as Anastasia brings topics of interest to Starseed and shares emails from our listeners around the world. We'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard, and you're welcome to call in with questions or comments. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And then remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you're new to our show, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose, Chris, Anastasia, and Tammy for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. And you can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And now I would like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar and Anastasia.
Lavendar here. And,
hi, Lavendar. Hi, Ariel. Hello, Starseed.
Hello.
We've got a great show lined up tonight. This is
we
gonna
sure
be
do.
Fantastic. And would you like me to lead off with the news? Because I know we need to make
yeah,
room
we
for
get
our
ready.
Guest.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, let's do that. Well, you know, there have been more fireballs in the sky, everybody. In fact, there was a copper-green fireball that streaked over California on the 21st of February. They said that it was really, really big, and some people saw it break up. They said it was as bright as the moon, and that was seen over Southern California. So there was a lot of buzz about that going around. And also in Maine, Maryland, and Massachusetts on the same day, there was an early morning meteor that blazed over in the sky, and people were saying that it was green and didn't have any noise, but also was as bright as Venus with a long tail. And that's two separate incidents. Also, on the 25th of February, there were two separate fireballs over Canada, over the east and west coasts, Nova Scotia and Vancouver. So there's still fire in the sky, everybody, and two comets are now visible in the southern hemisphere. Comet Lemon and Comet Pan-STARRS, they got close enough together to be seen through a camera, a single image, so they're close together. And Comet Pan-STARRS is heading for a close encounter with the sun just inside the orbit of Mercury that could significantly boost its visibility in early March, and they think we'll be able to see that. They say that the comet will be visible to northern hemisphere observers at that time, so we got to keep our eyes out for that. Well, I don't know that I mentioned it, but I think I might have last week, but there is a sinkhole that has occurred in Arizona, and it is on a road, and it's near Page, And it just appeared out of nowhere, and it swallowed two cars, by the way, and caused 120 feet of highway to sink over 8 feet. Well, at first they thought it was just a sinkhole. They didn't know what caused it. But now geologists are thinking that the road is unrepairable because it appears that the whole side of the mountain is sinking.
Wow.
Oh, wow, that's really something. Pictures of that on the Internet or something else. Okay, well, I want to talk to all you starseed about something that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and I want to explain it. This came from the Alliance for Natural Health, which is a wonderful community of activists for the protection of natural health and, you know, health freedom. And they had an article on compact fluorescent light bulbs. And I wanted to kind of cover what they had talked about in their piece on this so that Starseed are aware of why I made the comments I did a couple of weeks ago about these light bulbs and suggesting that we maybe stock up on some incandescents or maybe some beeswax for candles, I don't know, or plan on going to bed at dusk. Because this is really a health issue. You know, the Alliance for Natural Health asks the question, has the government and General Electric lied to us? Well, the Energy and Independence and Security Act of 2007 mandated the phase-out of incandescent light bulbs and promoted energy-efficient compact fluorescent light bulbs, otherwise known as CFLs. Now, these CFL bulbs do contain mercury, and as you all know, mercury poses a significant cancer risk. Now, a new study coming out shows that CFL bulbs also emit high levels of ultraviolet radiation, specifically UVC and UVA rays. In fact, the UVA rays are so strong that they can actually burn the skin, and they say that the radiation could initiate cell death and cause melanoma. Now, in this study and in every bulb that the researchers tested, they found that the protective phosphor coating of the light bulb was cracked. Now, that supposedly, that phosphor coating is there to protect you. But the cracks in these bulbs allow the UV rays to escape and allow healthy skin cells to suffer from that. So these bulbs are not being manufactured in a way that really promotes the safety that they're saying, you know, that they have. And so on top of that, you know, it's a sad fact of life that light bulbs do break. And so how do you clean up the mercury after a bulb breaks? Well, any of you who've installed these light bulbs and have read the instructions on the box, you're going, whoa, it's really a problem. The Institute for Molecular and Nanoscale Innovation measured the release of mercury vapor from these broken bulbs, and they recorded concentrations near the bulb of up to 8 times the average 8-hour occupational exposure limit allowed by OSHA. And even more shocking, a child exposed to the broken CFL bulbs will receive 8,000 times the recommended amount of mercury vapor. Now, they're marketing this to the American public. Now, a broken 13-watt CFL bulb will have only released 30% of its mercury a full 4 days after it's broken, and the remainder is trapped in the bulb. So picking up shards with your bare hands or leaving them in poorly ventilated rooms is a bad, bad idea. You have to wear gloves, and there's no good solution for cleaning up these broken CFL bulbs. There's none. They don't have any. They're working on nanomaterial cloth, but that's not commercially available. And then, once if they do promote that or it does become available, how do we dispose of the cloth? Now, General Electric claims that these light bulbs don't produce a hazardous amount of UV radiation. But the truth is that all compact fluorescent light bulbs contain mercury vapor. And once that vapor is hit with an electric current, it emits a great number of UV rays. So this is a real concern. And they also, I want to say that they contain cancer-causing chemicals. Now, German scientists have done research on these bulbs, and they say that several different chemicals and toxins were released when the bulbs are just turned on, including naphthalene, which has been linked to cancer in animals, and styrene, which has been declared a human carcinogen. And they've also found that there's an electrical smog that develops around these bulbs, which could be dangerous. Now, you know, they're saying that CFLs are supposedly better for the environment, but according to the Association of Lighting and Mercury Recyclers, 98% of CFLs end up in landfills, creating a mercury buildup that can escape into our soil and waterways. And even worse than that, it will be not too long before consumers won't have the option to buy incandescent lights because they're just not going to be available. So they're going to eliminate 40, 60, 75, and 100-watt bulbs, and that is supposed to be in full force by 2014. Now, the United Nations has acknowledged that there's a problem with these mercury bulbs, and they have instated a ban on certain types of these bulbs, but we won't know the full implications of that ban until the treaty is made public, and who knows when that will be. The fact is, there's been enough research on these for everybody to steer clear of them. So any of you that have curly Q light bulbs in your house, I'm strongly recommended that you remove them, go back to your incandescent bulbs, and we can come up with another solution. The only thing that's going to be available is LED lamps, as far as I know. Well, they're mercury-free, but they do emit blue light, and that can be disruptive, excuse me, to sleeping. So I think the only solution in the interim is to stock up on incandescents until maybe we can work with the law on this. The Alliance for Natural Health has an action committee to try to get that stopped and to get that law overturned. All right. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about HARP, and that will probably take all of our time for this evening. But the National Research Laboratory scientists have produced dense artificial ionospheric plasma clouds using HARP. And this article came out of Science News. Now, you know, we don't hear a lot about what HARP does, so I thought this was an amazing article and surprisingly transparent, considering, you know, how secretive all of that is. But they have developed, and by the way, this is from the Naval Research Laboratory and the Plasmic Physics Division, and this is coming out of Alaska, from the HARP facility in Alaska. They have made these clouds and stated that previous artificial plasma density clouds have lifetimes of only 10 minutes or less, they said. Now, the new clouds that they have made were sustained over 1 hour by these recent HARP transmissions and was extinguished only after the termination of the HARP radio beam. Now, these glow discharges in the upper atmosphere were generated as a part of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, otherwise known as DARPA, to explore ionospheric phenomena and its impact on communications and space weather, so they say. Using the 3.8 megawatt high-frequency HARP transmitter, the plasma clouds, or balls of plasma, are being studied for use as artificial mirrors at altitudes 50 kilometers below the natural ionosphere and are to be used for the reflection of high-frequency radar and communication signals. Now, past attempts to produce electron density enhancements have yielded densities of 4 times 10 to the 5th electrons per cubic centimeter, but they have increased that now to 9 times 10 to the 5th power using this HARP transmission at the 6th harmonic of the electron cyclotron frequency. Well, I mention these statistics because some of our starseed are interested and know a little bit about harmonics, and I wanted to give you those figures because that would mean something particular to those of you who are savvy to such things. But this is something that's going on, and, you know, goodness knows what else they're doing. They say that they're going to schedule more experiments early this year now, and this is going to include experiments to develop even denser, more stabilized ionization clouds. Wow, they need to leave our atmosphere alone.
I hear you.
So that's what's going on out there. I think I'll just cover, we've got a couple more minutes, so I want to give you another story. I want our Starseed listeners to know that Kellogg's has recalled 36,000 packages of its Special K Red Berry cereal because it contains dangerous glass fragments, and these have been pulled from the market. If you have any Special K Red Berry cereal on yourself, please go online and get the recall or the UPC codes to see if yours has one of the recall boxes. And so I think that'll do it for tonight, but I'm looking forward to tonight's show. It's going to be fantastic. And next week we'll pick up the rest of the stories that I didn't have time to cover tonight. And please allow me to thank all of our wonderful Starseed listeners who emailed me with such great news this week. You're all just fantastic. I know we have a Starseed News Network. We've got boots on the ground out there, people bringing in all kinds of fascinating things to bring forward. And I want you all to keep this up because we might get something really going here. We've got reporters all over the world now.
That's great.
Isn't that great?
That's
it's fantastic.
Great.
This is just what we need. We can
get
the truth. We'll just go out and get it ourselves.
That's right. Right. And this is a great lead-in for Tyrell as well.
Yes, it is.
That's
well,
good.
Y'all have a great week, and I'm looking forward to the show. And blessings to all of you beautiful Starseed. I give you all my love.
Thank you so much, Anastasia. And we will be going to Lavendar here just for a moment to introduce Tyrell.
Lavendar here, and do we have Tyrell on? Is he there?
Yes, he's here with the mic open.
Okay.
Hello. Yes.
Okay,
yes, I'm
Tyrell,
here.
I'm so excited to have you. Tyrell Ventura, I've been watching Conspiracy Theory from the day that it came on. In fact, when your first show happened, it was about HAARP. And I was like, HAARP, the first show? Boy, this is brave. And from that moment on, I've recorded them on my DVR. Even when my DVR says they're going to erase them, I don't allow it. I just don't allow it. I keep everything. But this year, you really, I thought, just, you crossed the line with very, very interesting information that led to death ray, time travel, skinwalkers. I don't even know where to begin tonight, except maybe we should start with talking about our friend Fred Bell, because Fred Bell was a friend to a lot of us that are listening to this show, and he did come on your show and talk about the death ray. So, Tyrell, why don't you first start telling us about that particular show that you were involved with, Fred Bell?
Well, it was an interesting show, and forgive me, it's been almost 2 years now, I think, roughly, since we went into production, all these things. So if I don't remember everything, I apologize in advance. It's a tough production schedule, and you kind of get all caught up in doing it. But I remember we're looking into the death rays and Dr. Judy Woods' work, and Fred came up in our research, and we reached out to him, and he had some really great, kind of insider information on how the government's kind of developed this technology. He worked on it at one point. And was a fascinating guy, and a great interview that Jesse had with him. And then tragically, just a few days, I think it was like maybe even 2 days or a couple days after he did the interview with Jesse, he passed away from, I believe the final word was a heart attack. I might be wrong in that, but it was very creepy for all of us because we are talking about a weapon type of technology that could potentially induce heart attacks in people or make it look like they had a heart attack. And so we, immediately kind of after our, goosebumps went down and our hair stopped standing on end, we, started looking into it to see if there was anything bizarre or anything like that, around the events of his death at the hotel. On paper, it looks like a heart attack, but when you've worked, in that world as long as we have and things like that, you don't know at the end of the day. And he was a very sweet man, and everybody that we met around him, the people that he left behind, were all very wonderful and genuinely good, decent people, and so it was a great tragedy to lose someone like him.
Yes, you're one of your producers, Renee Barnett, is a personal friend of mine and a friend of this show. And she called me, and she told me about the passing of Fred, and she was pretty shook up at that moment in time, and we all were. I don't know all the, the ifs, ands, and buts of this story, but in the heart of my heart, I feel like that something was really playing with his energy field and causing him to have this heart attack. That's just the way I feel about it. Can you tell us a little bit more about this death ray that he talked about for so many years?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, what I understand, again, it's been a while, but essentially, it's a technology that it was developed during the Star Wars program in the 80s. Not only were they trying to kind of build a sort of electronic shield defense system, in layman's terms, to kind of, target any incoming missiles. That's what their original idea was, that if Russia were to fire missiles at us, we would use satellites and other such technologies to essentially shoot laser beams, not like Star Wars laser beams, not that literal, but, you know, essentially shoot laser beams at these missiles to kind of blow them out of the sky so they could never land and cause massive chaos. And part of that research into that technology, you know, a lot of Tesla's work and things like that, that essentially, you know, you could use it to, you know, level cities, as Fred said, or buildings, or, you know, all the way down to a human being, this kind of microwave technology. I can't, I wish I could get into the science of it, but I'm not that, I would probably speak terribly on it because there's other people that are much smarter than I am on that. But in layman's terms, essentially, it's essentially that. It's invisible rays that cause massive amounts of destruction, or that could potentially just cause the death of one person. And, you know, we've seen the military kind of use that kind of things a little bit in crowd control and things like that. They've tested off, like, using microwave energy to kind of, you know, make, you know, an area very hot, to kind of disperse crowds. I know that they have that energy, and that's all, you know, that's on CNN. You can only imagine what they have behind closed doors, and, you know, places like Groom Lake and things like that where they test these kind of weaponry. And so, yeah, digging into that show, you know, we had a lot of threats. One of our producers was threatened, you know, just saying, you know, people that look into this, they tend to disappear. And that's kind of the case when you look into any kind of top secret technology and things like that. Obviously, they don't want the world to know about what they're up to. And, you know, sometimes that is for the direct purpose of kind of scaring people with information. You know, ooh, they might have that, so we better be careful. Or because they actually did develop it. And that's kind of the whole world we were running around in on that episode. And it was a fascinating piece of technology to look into. Because even if they didn't really develop it, like, let's say they didn't even get as far as we think they did, the fact that they're looking into kind of mass, I mean, it's like building the atom bomb again. You know, you have to be very watchful to where even if the government doesn't particularly succeed at some of the things that they try to do as far as developing weapon technology like that, it's still the fact that they're looking into it can even be dangerous, you know, because you never want Pandora's box to be open.
Yeah, and we realized that Pandora's box was open when Brian O'Leary, he came out with a lot of information about this technology. He said that he'd been hit with it, and he said it caused him to have cancer. And before he died, he really put a blast out there about it. I guess you knew Brian. Didn't you interview Brian O'Leary?
I believe we did. Yeah, I believe we talked to Brian. He was another really, you know, really good whistleblower on the subject. And you know, it's sad when you lose people who are just out fighting for the truth.
Yeah.
But we do still. I think we do still outnumber them.
Absolutely, we do. We have boots on the ground. So the next thing I'd like to ask you about was the wonderful show you did about time travel. That one really excited me a whole lot, and I just would love to hear the anything you have to tell us about.
Well, it was really interesting because when you go into an episode like that, you know, you kind of, it opens up a world of you know, possibilities, and it's very, you know, it's hard to kind of, you know, I hate to say irrational and rational, but it's hard to kind of balance your rational thought process of there's no way we could have time travel with, well, there might be something to this, you know. And so you kind of, I remember in the research of it, we were kind of constantly going back and forth on it, you know, because, you know, again, would I put it past our government and its agencies or any government and its agencies to look into something potentially as powerful as the manipulation of time? No, of course not. Of course they're going to look into it. Scientists in general would look into it. Anyone were you know, curious. But, you know, in talking with Andy Bishago, you know, that's, you know, he makes such a very interesting and compelling case, no matter how outlandish it may seem to the common person, or to, you know, because that's kind of, I always kind of approach things myself from just, okay, well, you know, I'm open to anything, but let me, you know, let me hear what you have to say, and I, you know, I'll kind of make the best judgment I can. And talking to him, he was a fascinating guy, and you know, I think at the end of the day, I don't know if everything that he believes is true. I know that he believes it. I know that he wasn't lying in that sense. I don't think he's a guy who's making up his stories. I don't think he's concocting wild fantasies. But what exactly did happen to him, we'll never know, or is happening to him, we'll never know. But it definitely was a fascinating world to get into and to see the kind of the possibility of it or the reality of it was very, very interesting. And Andy's a very dynamically interesting human being and a very sweet person. And what was really interesting in talking to him is he is kind of the only thing that he talks about. Like he is so focused on what happened to him in his past and trying to figure out all the details of what potentially happened to him, that he's very kind of, I don't want to say narrow-minded, but he's very kind of, he's focused in on that, and it's kind of his life's work to a certain extent, and a very interesting guy, very fascinating human being.
About how old do you think Andy is?
How old do I think he is? I would say he's probably maybe in his 40s. 50s, 60s? I don't really know. I'm sure I wrote it down somewhere.
The reason I'm asking is because some of the things that he talked about in New Mexico and what was happening then, it's like I was really looking at the years and the dates when he said that when he first did one of those time jumps that he saw the Governor Richardson, who was not governor, of course. He was, a young man.
Yeah. Well, I know that. I believe he said he was somewhere around, I think he was somewhere around like 7 to 12 years old, somewhere in that range when all of that was going on, because his father had worked, I believe, in the Defense Department and kind of brought him into these experimentations. And, the reason, because I asked him, why kids? Why all these kids? Why were they using kids? And it was an interesting answer that he gave me when he said, they tried it originally with adults. 20-something soldiers, things like that. But what ended up happening is that as you get older, your sense of reality and what you believe to be reality is kind of locked in, as the older we get. The water's wet, the sky is blue, that kind of thing. And so when you're suddenly presented with something as earth-shattering as time travel, an adult mind can't handle it. And he said that a lot of the older folks that they tested it on, a lot of the 20-something soldiers that they tested it on, 30-something soldiers, went nuts because it so fractured their sense of reality. Whereas a little kid, they don't have that kind of hard and fast rule of reality. I mean, little kids are, they can, I hope no kids are listening, cover your ears. Little kids believe in Santa Claus and things like that, and they really believe it. And so he was saying that it was easier to do the experiments with kids because if you take a kid and travel through time, they don't know that that's uncommon. They don't know that we can't do that. They don't, their sense of what reality is still open to anything. And so that's why they tested it on him when he was so young, according to Mr. Bishago.
So correct me if I'm wrong. So did he go into the future and come back and, was there anything that he saw in the future that could be verified today?
Off the top of my head, I know that he had said that I believe, and don't quote me, it's been a while, but I believe that he had said that he had done some of that. Mostly it was into the past. Mostly it was like the Gettysburg Address, and then he had an interaction with Washington during the Revolutionary War. I know he didn't get into the future that much. I know he talked a lot about like jumping to Mars. This apparent colony on Mars and things like that. I don't remember him getting into the future much. I know that he did, I believe, make reference to that they knew that 9/11 was going to happen back in like the 70s because they had jumped. So I don't know if he had jumped or somebody had jumped and kind of had witnessed that heard about it. Like I said, I'm paraphrasing here terribly. It's been 2 years. So. And there's a lot of information to do 8 different shows. I mean, I think we did a total of maybe 30-some-odd shows over the 3 years we were working on the TV show. So, a lot of information swirling around in my head. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of all of it.
Well, I'm sure. Well, we sure do love those shows. Another show that really was fascinating to me, especially since we had just come back from Hot Springs, Arkansas, a lot of us went to that Starseed Quest in October, and you had a segment showing that there was an underground city that had been built, I guess, by our, is it by our government or was it private funds? Can you give us a little insight to what
we went into that, I know, in the Denver Airport show, as well as the show we did in the Ozarks. And a lot of, we did our best to try to discover it. And, I mean, the Ozarks are filled with caverns and caves and things like that. So, and then when we went into some of these places, it was pretty amazing. The infrastructure that people have been building underground. The parts that we went into were private industry. And most of it was pretty above board. I mean, you know, they used a lot of it for, you know, cold storage, things like that. But it's there and it exists. And then if private industry is building it, you know that the government's way ahead of them. And I know there was also, when we went into the Denver Airport show, that there was also some very good evidence that possibly that airport has a massive tunnel system underneath it that connects up, I believe, all the way up to some military bases in Utah and things like that. And it was interesting to see, because again, it's, you know, how much of this world, you know, do we see on a day-to-day basis, and then what, you know, very literally what's going on underneath us. I know I've read some reports that there's like a massive transit system underneath the ground, for, you know, underground train tunnels and things like that to move, you know, high ups in the state and things like that in the case of like a nuclear attack, things like that. And, you know, the Ozark thing was particularly interesting because, you know, here you have a guy who, you know, worked in the intelligence community and now is building this, like, massive, massive home that he's labeling as a home that, I mean, my God, you could probably comfortably have, you know, over 100 people living there. And the fact that it's sitting on top of a massive cavern system or could potentially be a massive underground, parts of it we saw, a massive underground tunnel system, once again, gets back to that idea of, you know, what is beneath our feet and what are they planning for? You know, there's a lot of very good educated guesses out there, but I think more research and more looking into that is definitely needed. Especially when you have little communities with about 8 to 10 banks. You know, it's like, I think we looked up in some research, like 2 to 3 banks per individual in this one community. You know, why would that be? You know, why are they, you know, kind of building these strange little places in the middle of what normally is just kind of nice little small towns across America?
Wasn't that Mountain View, Arkansas? Wasn't that the name of the town?
Yeah, I believe it was. Yes, I believe
All those banks. Yeah. It's like, oh my goodness, one bank for every 57 people.
Yeah, either it's the worst city planning in history, or there's definitely a reason that they're putting a centralized banking system in this small town. And, you know, it could just be, I mean, again, a lot of the things that we went into, there could be a very logical answer for it, but the problem that we always kept running into is that the government would never talk to us. They would always stonewall us. And one of the things that I've always found is that, you know, if you don't want people, you know, coming, you know, if you don't want people getting into, you know, looking into conspiracies, and you don't want people believing that there is, you know, there are conspiracies out there, then do things above board. You know, don't stonewall questions. Don't act like nothing's happening when very clearly something is. You know, that's what breeds people. That's what makes people suddenly go, wait a minute, there's something up here. You know, just give us the answers, and then that's kind of what we were hoping to try to do with a lot of the show, or at least get people out there to start asking the questions that need to be asked.
When you were traveling around and gathering all this information about death rays, time travel, the Ozarks, all of that, did you have people following you? Did you have your phone bug? Did they bug your motel rooms? Did they come up and try to scare you off of a story or anything like that?
I mean, nothing that didn't make it to TV. Obviously there was, you know, there's a few times, you know, like Fred Bell and things like that definitely got us a little nervous. I know that there was a few other times where, you know, you get that feeling you're being followed, but I don't, you know, I can't say, oh, here's a picture of the car that was following her. You know, I don't have any real proof of it. But there was definitely a few times where we thought, like, oh, that's a little creepy. I think there was a few pictures that got out online of when we were shooting that there was nobody with a camera with an eyesight that could have taken those shots that we saw. You know, so There was a few little, like, creepy little moments like that where you're kind of like, how did someone get a picture of that when we knew where our crew was, we knew where everybody was, and that didn't, we were in the middle of a field, like, there wasn't anybody else around. You know, so there was a few little moments like that that definitely were interesting. you know, it's kind of the nature of the game. I mean, there was many instances where, you know, police would show up when we're looking at, you know, when we're looking at the FEMA camps in out here by Long Beach. You know, we had many little altercations where, you know, people were called and suddenly the authorities were there. And, you know, we have no idea how they got there or why. I know when we were looking into the Manimal stuff, you know, we had a guy show up out of the blue who claimed to be Neighborhood Watch, but come on, you know. You know, so there was a lot of little different things like that that happened. But, you know, me, myself, particularly, I never felt in any way, in any sense of danger, you know, apart from the instances that you did see on TV. Outside of that, you know, I never, you know, my father, Jesse Ventura, have my phones or cell phones been bugged? I'm probably sure they have been at some point. maybe they still are, who knows, but you kind of just learn to live with it.
Yeah. I was especially interested in what you put forth in something called Brain Invaders, where you were talking about people that had been tagged and implants had been placed in their brains. And give us a little history of how that came about for you to decide to show that to the world.
Well, you know, honestly, that came about very strongly from reader mail. You know, I you know, we you know, we did great reader mail, you know, or reader mail, I'm sorry, viewer mail. You know, we have a lot of, you know, we have a great fan base, and I go through almost all the mail that we get, and I apologize, you know, we can't respond to all of it, because we get, you know, we get stacks of it. But one of the things that I noticed was I kept getting letters about, from targeted individuals saying, would you please look into this? And so we did, and that's when we found the doctor who had been treating some targeted individuals, who Jesse met with at the beginning of the show. And, you know, that's what really kind of came about. You know, that's how we kind of found it and started doing the research into it and finding that, yeah, you know, there's, you know, there's too many people dealing with this that you can kind of write it off as just simply, you know, they're some kind of psychotic, you know, psychological malfunction. You know, there's far too many people from too many different walks of life, I think, that are definitely being harassed in this way. Now, you know, one of the things that didn't make it to the show that I was kind of looking at that I thought might have been one of the reasons as to why so many people from so many different walks of life are being affected by it, and we really weren't able to get into it on the show, but it's something that I kind of myself came to a conclusion to. But apart from the people who you can tell very clearly are being targeted by the government, just, you know, they did an action here against the government or were speaking out in some way, and then suddenly they're, you know, a targeted individual, you know, and getting all the, you know, ramifications from that. But one of the things that I kind of came upon that I thought was interesting was, this is the first time, I think, in human history that we've had this much technology surrounding us, whether it be Bluetooth technology, microwave energy, the television rays flying through the air, satellite rays. You know, we're surrounded by invisible rays nowadays. And one of the thoughts I had was maybe not all of the targeted individuals, but I wonder if a good portion of them, it could very well be, it might not be government at all. It could be the beginning of possibly an allergy, you know, a very real medical condition. I mean, like I said, this is the first time in human history we've had this much invisible, you know, rays going through the air. And are human beings okay to have that kind of constant bombardment and possibly, if some of these symptoms or some of the things that are happening could be an allergic reaction to them. You know, I don't believe that all of it is. I believe that a good portion of it, more than likely, is some kind of government, you know, CIA, NSA kind of experimentation. But I would also think that maybe some of it could literally be an allergic reaction to the amount of technology we have flowing through the air nowadays. And no one really wants to look into that because, you know, that creates a very... you know, it creates a very tough, it brings up a lot of tough answers to how to fix it, because we're so dependent on wireless technology.
And I think you're onto something. I know that a few years ago I was very involved in getting some information to Congress about the cell phones and the cell phone towers. Mm. And what we ran into when we tried to do that was just nobody wanted to give up their cell phone to even look
at it. Oh, no, and, you know, you got corporations making a lot of money, and then suddenly you can prove that, you know, this kind of, you know, using your cell phone gives you, you know, cancer or tumors, or, you know, makes you feel like you're burning up, or makes your voice is in your ear, or, you know, any of the number of things that are going on, you know, human beings are diverse and wonderful population. You know, there's the, you know, the, you can't say that not every, like, you can't, nothing is going to be universally safe. no kind of technology can ever be universally safe. There's always, you know, any modern medicine will always tell you that there's always some kind of side effects that affect somebody,
right.
You know, because we're all individuals. And I would be hard-pressed to believe that with the amount of wireless technology that's being used today that there isn't going to be some kind of adverse reaction to it. And I often wonder, because if you look at the rise of kind of microwave and all that kind of wireless energy, that's right when the targeted individuals started kind of popping up.
How about WAN technology? GWEN, you covered
Gwen,
that pretty well in that segment.
Yeah, the GWEN
technology. Our audience a little heads up about what the GWEN technology is.
Yeah, essentially what the GWEN towers were is that they were left over from the Cold War. They were originally used for essentially the emergency broadcast system. In case a nuclear bomb hits, you know, and infrastructure falls, you have these kind of standing towers crisscrossing the country that you can get radio waves out, and you're able to kind of communicate with the people who would survive that kind of hit. And then they kind of apparently decommissioned them after the kind of Cold War ended, but they never tore any of them down. I know the Coast Guard operates a lot of them. And basically how they work is that the kind of bottom levels of the GWEN Tower are all now kind of farmed out to radio stations, things like that. But the top level of the GWEN Tower is still under government control. Now, they won't say what they're using it for or if they're using it, but they know it's under government control. And one of the things that we found is that a lot of the kind of clusters of target individuals were closer in and around these GWEN towers. You can make a hypothetical guess, I think, that possibly that could be one of the delivery instruments to kind of target people. Like I said, do I have the hard, cold facts to say, yes, that's what they're used for? No, but it's a pretty good guess. You know, it's a pretty educated guess. Satellites would be the other, the other option there as well. But they're very interesting in where they're at and how they're crisscrossed the country. And, the government doesn't just stop using things. I mean, they don't, you know, if something's in place that's already there and they don't have to build anything new, they're going to use what's in place. You know, as much as they waste money, they do like to recycle.
Right. Also, I was told by several UFO researchers that they found out that some of the McDonald's was also hooked up to the GWEN network.
Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm always learning new. I mean, that's the one fun thing about working on this show that was one of the hard parts about working on the show, too, is that, you know, we have our window of being able to kind of research things in order to get them on the air. It's only about a 6-7 month window. And a lot of times, you know, we'd research the hell out of something, put the show together, get it ready to go for broadcast, air it. And then during that process towards the end, when it's like beyond, you know, you kind of pass the certain limit of when you can put new information in, something new would come up and you'd be like, oh, I wish we could have gotten that in there, or, oh, and now we figured it out. Yeah. So there was a few instances of that where you kind of suddenly are like, oh, and there, we really could have used that information at one point. But that's just because people are out there researching, which is very good, and it makes me feel good that people are out there asking questions and continuing to research into the shows. And at the very least, even if we couldn't get everything into a show, at the very least, we just hope that it got people asking questions.
So when is the next season going to be on? Because this one has ended. When's the next season?
We'll have to see. I know that we're still kind of waiting to see. I don't know. I haven't gotten any word yet. I wish I could say, oh, we're ramping up right now, but I haven't heard anything new. We're kind of in a holding pattern and waiting to see like everybody else. Hopefully we'll get another season.
So do you have things already in the can, things that you haven't produced yet?
No, we go season to season. So every season, you know, as soon as we get the green light, you know, we kind of come together and start looking at what new topics we can look into. I'm always kind of keeping my ear to the ground. Me and Sean Stone especially are always kind of keeping our ear to the ground along with some of the other producers, so we have something ready to go. But as far as shooting or working on new episodes and things like that, we usually wait until we get the green light. Because it's expensive to research, and I'd rather, you know, it's always better to do it off someone else's dime.
Let's just say that for some reason television says, no, we don't want you anymore. Could you possibly, just do it on the Internet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that if we're not lucky enough to get a fourth season, I think that I know that Jesse, my dad, I know that Sean Stone especially, I know that a lot of us will continue to kind of figure out what to do, with the show from then. Maybe it won't be, conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura, but we'll definitely kind of continue the pursuit for truth. That will never end. If we are only able to get three seasons, I look at those three seasons and say we did a hell of a job.
Getting those three seasons
on the air.
Can you get your series on DVDs? Do you have those to sell now?
I wish we did. I've been bothering the network about that for a long time. For whatever reason, the network, most of their shows don't release on DVD or, Netflix and things like that. I don't know why. I don't think it's anything particular to our show. I think that they, as a network, haven't really explored that world of distribution. But I would love to get the shows on DVD. I know that there's, write the network and tell them to get it on DVD, because I know that there's a lot of, we would love to be able to kind of put out, full seasons on DVD and put in some extra stuff that didn't make it to the final episodes, or, get some good commentary tracks from Jesse and things like that. I would, that's something that we are always kind of hoping to do, and that we're still hoping to do.
Well, I certainly hope so, too, because I don't know how much longer I'm going to get to hold all these shows on my DVR.
I know. I thankfully know that there's a lot of good people out there that even though while we're on air, I always like, don't put them on YouTube because no one's going to tune in. But I know that people can find them on YouTube and clips and things like that. So thankfully the shows, I don't think they'll ever really die. I don't think they'll ever really go away. I think that thankfully we did a good enough job that they're kind of part of the national conscious of entertainment and viewing and things like that. And, we did the best we could, at the end of the day.
Well, you did an excellent job. I'm noticing the time, and you said you had an hour, so we probably have some callers that have comments or questions for you, if you'd be open to talking to some of our callers. So, Ariel,
I'll hand it over to you, Ariel.
Okay. Well, we do have some callers with questions. So, first of all, we are going to be talking to Lynn. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air.
Thank you. Well, I'm another big fan of your show and your dad's show, and I would like to know how we can help solicit them to keep it on. I would also love to see this go to Netflix so that the whole season could be streamed, and certainly with the amount of people that we have out there to start petitioning for you. Do you have any suggestions on how we might help achieve that?
Thank you for being such a great fan, Lynn. I think the best way to do it would just be to write the network. I don't have their address in front of me right now, but it's True TV. I believe they're in New York. You can look them up online. I believe they'll have their address there. And I would say just, write letters to the network and let them know that you want to see another season, or at the very least get these seasons on DVD.
Thank you very much. Continue the good work.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Lynn, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we have another caller here. Just let me get the mic open. Okay, Ralph, you are on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much, Jen. And Tyrell, it's good to hear you on the show. I've watched your father do a number of shows before, and he's always kind of flabbergasted me as to how he's able to keep the show on the air, quite frankly, after airing some of the things that he does, since it's almost well known that the controllers of the networks actually kind of caused some of the problems. Well, that's a conspiracy theory in itself, I guess. But my question to you is on Andy Bishago doing his, and I don't know how deeply involved you got with him, but did you ever hear him mention that Obama was one of the people who also was involved in the jump rooms?
Yeah, he did. He did mention that quite a bit, and you know, referenced him as Barry Satoro and that. And again, you know, it's, you know, Andy is so dedicated in researching his own past and things like that. You know, and I believe he kind of mentioned that Obama was one of the kids that they had told, you're going to be president someday. You know, and it's an amazing to hear Andy tell it. I you know, it's hard because on one hand, as a research investigator, you're like, okay, well, is there anything tangible like that you can show us? Because he had that great picture of him at Gettysburg. Is there anything else that you can show us tangibly that you know, that Obama was there? And you know, he can kind of show the research, and you know, he can kind of, you know, he has other people, other witnesses on things like that. But again, you know, it's very tough because it is kind of just Andy's word, which I, like I said, I believe that Andy believes he's telling the truth, you know, and so I think that it was fascinating. Like I said, Andy's a hell of an interesting guy. And,
yeah.
And you know, whatever did happen to him, I believe, you know, I definitely believe something happened to him. I don't know if it was time travel. I don't know. I mean, one of the things I thought of was possibly he could have been involved in some experimentation and they implanted time travel memories in him to kind of cover up what they were doing to him. That could be a theory. But I do believe that Andy is genuine in his beliefs. And I don't think Andy's, you know, making anything up. But yeah, the Obama thing is very interesting that they were going back and, you know, kind of finding people before they became president and telling them that they're going to be president and you need to listen to us. You know, that was very fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I know you have some other callers that want to talk to you. So I hope your show stays on and we keep getting the good information on the conspiracy theories. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ralph. So if anyone else has a question or a comment for Tyrell, you need to push 1 on your keypad so we know that you want to come on the air. And while we are waiting to get some other callers, I was just wondering if you have some ideas of shows that you would like to do in the future, or if you're looking for ideas for shows to do in the future.
Oh, good question. I mean, I definitely want to look into, I would love to look into the LIBOR scandal. It's a little bit, you know, a little bit more, you know, I'd love to go back to the kind of the Wall Street scandals and things like that. I know it's a little bit of a dry subject, but I think, you know, proving the manipulation that's gone on over the last months of our world economy and things like that is an important subject matter. I would love to look into the drones and seeing what exactly they have in store for us regarding the drone usage here in the States and the targeting and the assassination of U.S. citizens and that kind of very shady goings on. I would love to go, you know, one episode that we went into that we weren't able to get on the air this year was the PSA episode, and I'd love to be able to finish that episode and get that out there. You know, that was some really fascinating stuff, and then some very kind of diabolical pathways that we were beginning to go down. So there's definitely some stuff that if we got another season, I would love to kind of hit that stuff. I know this last season we went a little bit more into the kind of metaphysics and a little bit more into the more kind of out there, not out there, but you know, a little bit more into the more wild out conspiracy theories out there. And I think, you know, this next season, I think it'd be fun to kind of have a nice balance between the stuff that is much more metaphysical and spiritual, as well as the stuff that's a little bit more, you know, or say James Bondy, or a little bit more of the kind of, you know, drones, hardcore stuff like that. I'd always love to do one on the drug war, too. That would be a really interesting, fascinating topic.
Well, that's kind of reading my mind there, because the whole, you know, just say no to drugs, that does not apply to big pharmaceutical companies.
No, it does not. No,
as a matter of fact,
it's the
opposite.
I was going to say, one of the major reasons you don't see a lot of investigations in the big pharmacy companies is just watch your television ads. You know, big pharma were brilliant in the fact that they advertised heavily on most TV shows, and especially in news programming and things like that, to where most news networks can't go after big pharma because that's who pays their bills. You know, and you know, it's that when it comes down, you know, when you see a lot of these news networks, when it comes down to, are we going to do a investigative piece on big pharma, or do we lose our sponsorship? Ooh, you know, that's suddenly salaries and jobs that they could be losing.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, they talk about diabolical. that's between that and the cell phone, the lies and deceptions of the wireless industry about the dangers of cell phones, and that piece that Anastasia did on the mercury lights, the little curly Q that, oh, it's going to be better for the environment. That's just not true. And when she said that there was actually legislation that got passed to not outlaw, but to phase out incandescent lights, I mean, all kinds of lights and bells were going off in my head because...
It's crazy. You know, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that I think people need to always know is that the you have to pay attention to what laws are being passed, and you have to pay attention to, you know, what, you know, the legislation is being put forward. I know it can kind of, you know, it's easier to go on Yahoo or go on your news and kind of look up a few fun things, but you have to start paying attention to that more and more. And one of the best ways I've always found for people to really start changing the government, truthfully, is to start at a local level. You know, not everybody kind of gets caught up in what happens in the congressional and the presidential and, like, these big, huge bills and things like that, when really a lot of the things that directly affect you and I are handled on much more of a state, local level. And if people were more active in keeping track of, you know, what their mayor is doing, what their city council is doing, what their governor is doing, you know, that is going to start a change. And one of the things that needs to happen, and one of the things I hope to we accomplish with this show, is getting people to ask questions about the different things that are said to them, like, you know, why are we outlawing incandescent light bulbs? You know, why is that happening? You know, that has to start at a local level and then build to the national level. You know, they're never going to hear your voices on a national level, but they will hear your voices on a local level. And people need to start paying attention to local politics and local legislation first. And then that will slowly undercut what's going on the high level.
That's a very good strategy. And
you know, a good example of that, a really good example of that to a certain extent is, because what it does, a good example of that is kind of the marijuana legislation that was recently passed in all these states, whether it be medicinal or legalizing it. What that does is it puts the states in direct confrontation with the feds, and it shows the feds for being two-faced and how they, you know, handle a problem. And, you know, the more kind of legislation that gets passed on a state local level like that, that goes directly against what the feds are doing, the more that kind of two-facedness or that duplicity comes out. And that needs to happen more, because that's how you'll change what the feds are doing.
Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg, and certainly all the things that people can do, if just everyday ordinary type people with the existence of the internet can really form great networks and alliances and exchanging of ideas, and certainly it can happen, has to happen, as you said, on the grassroots level.
Yes,
but
yes, that's how change comes.
And taking personal responsibility for things like the environment, and as you said about, you know, big pharma getting everybody in their pocket, we too have financial power, even if it's on a smaller level, but we can speak with our wallets and just not buy certain things or not subscribe to certain things. products, and gosh, the list
that's the
is
biggest
on
thing.
And
people,
on and on and on.
People need to realize that at the end of the day, we're the consumers, and without us, they are bankrupt. You know, and that is a powerful thing. I've often said that the one way that if you want to have a bloodless revolution in this country without anyone getting hurt and without anybody, you know, having to storm the halls of Congress or, you know, you don't even need to do all that. If you truly wanted to have a revolution in this country or in the world, it would be to get people to stay home from work and not buy anything for a few days. That would cripple the entire infrastructure, and then you'd force them to listen to you.
That's true, but then what happens is people say, okay, we're not going to buy anything on Tuesday and Wednesday, so Monday we're going to go and stock up. So it kind of balances out. So you have to maintain your position and just, you know, I refuse to buy that, or I refuse to do this, and be selective on what you do spend your money on, products that have environmental responsibility. So, I mean, it has to be a long-term thing.
I agree completely. I think that, you know, there needs to be that kind of organization. You know, there needs to be that kind of organization, and there needs to be that kind of intelligence behind how to stage a massive strike that could truly change things. You know, I mean, if you get people to stay home from, you know, running FedEx, or you know, if the airline pilots decided to stay home for a day, you know, that would be a pretty brutal impact on everything. In a good way, I think, in a very strong way, if we were all solid behind that kind of protest.
Right. Well, there is power in unity, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I wanted to kind of talk about is what if someone has an idea or someone knows something is going on, how do they contact you? If, you know, assuming that your show is going to be going for another season.
Yeah, I think the best way would be either to write to True TV or go to Jesse Ventura's Facebook page, Jesse Ventura, the official Facebook page. That's a great way to kind of get, you know, I have the message thing in there, and it's a great way to get messages to Jesse and myself in order to kind of look into some more things and, you know, just provide, you know, say what you want to see, and then provide some links, and we will definitely look into it and, you know, see what we can do. Like I said, it's hard to get back to everybody, but know that I do my best to try to read everything that comes across my way, whether it be actual physical mail or online mail.
Okay, well, I know that we have a very awake and conscious audience, and they pay attention and they track things in a different way than the pacified majority, and some of that is actually, I think, also coming from cell towers and the harp frequencies. When you get into the thought projections, and people get stressed out, and people get they wake up and they feel depressed, and they think it's them. So,
yeah.
And if it goes on long enough, then they go to the doctor and see if they can get a pill. And,
exactly.
And it could be as simple as electromagnetic interference.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I agree. There's a million things in this world that you know, are done to us to kind of keep us in line, whether it be electromagnetic interference, whether it be, you know, making every, you know, putting us into massive debt for just going to school.
Right.
You know, all of those things are all, you know, I believe are all elements of design to kind of keep us down. You know, the destruction of the middle class, I don't think that was an accident. I think that was done on purpose, because the middle class citizenry are the ones who generally have enough time to pay attention and to try to make great change. If it's just a mix of rich and poor, and that's all a country has, well, you know, if you're under an intense amount of debt and you're getting hit with electromagnetic pulses and things like that, and you're stressed out all the time and you just have to worry about keeping a roof over your family's heads and just putting food on your table, you don't have time to be an activist. You don't have time to do things like that. And,
right.
You know, I think that it's we really need to kind of start looking at how we spend our money and what we spend our money on, and, you know, you thank God the internet's out there and it provides a lot of good alternative news media and you know, radio stations, you know, radio shows like yourselves and, you know, things like that is important. And we have to do our best, even if we don't have a lot to live on and things like that, we got to do our best to remain stress-free and love life for what it is. It's a great thing to be alive, no matter what circumstances you're in. It's always better to be alive than dead.
Right. Well, Tyrell, I know you said you only had an hour to spend with us, so I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we hold you in high esteem for the work that you do in helping to expose the truth and keep up the good work, and we hope that you can come back sometime and that your season gets picked up again and we can give you some more ideas.
I would love to. Thank you for having me on, and thank you all for watching the show and all the support you've given us. We couldn't do it without you, and everybody means the world to us, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Tyrell. And everyone, just you can go to the truetv.com website and see the older episodes, and if you have ideas, send them in. So we're going to say goodbye to you now, Tyrell. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. So if anyone else has a comment for tonight's show, press 1 on your keyboard. Otherwise, we'll be signing off here. Levendar, that was just really, really a great interview. So enjoyed this information and knowing, you know, truth has so much power, and even if it's not a truth that you want to acknowledge, it can't ever really hurt you. If it is true, then you can know what to do.
Well, I hope that everyone will email True TV and say we want more and really give conspiracy theories a big boost from our listeners. I think it'd be wonderful if several people would take it upon themselves to follow up and let that network know that we want more. We do want more. There were so many things I wanted to ask him. I wanted to ask him more about HAARP and the Manchurian Candidate special, and the Skinwalker story. Richard just nudged me and said, "Oh, why didn't he talk about the Skinwalkers?" That one was a really eye-opener. So maybe we can have him back on and he can tell us more about some of the things that he's discovered along the way in these last 3 years of filming. And by the way, I'd like to give a shout-out to our friend Lynn in Oklahoma City who called in a while ago. She did win her election, and she is now a chairman of the Board of Education in Oklahoma City.
Well,
so,
congratulations.
She was part of my... when I did my solar return, my future self, she was included in that, and I had encouraged her to run for office, and she did run for office, and she won. So I wanted to give a shout-out to Lynn in Oklahoma City.
Well, congratulations, Lynn. Well, before we sign off here, I do want to tell everyone about our Hot Springs Starseed Crystal Quest, which is coming up in May. We did one in October, and it was such a stellar event that we are doing two more this spring. And we assemble soul groups according to astrological markings, and those markings give the rites of passage to go to Hot Springs. We're going to be digging for crystals. We are going to... be doing a lot of other things outside of digging for the crystals, but just forming the spin with the group. Each group will be different. So if you have had a chart reading from us, or even if you just know your own chart, if you have star markings at galactic degree, which is 25, 26, or 27, and that also includes like 2430, 2431, that's close enough to activate 25. So anything from 24 degrees, 30 minutes, up through 27 degrees in these six signs, Taurus and Scorpio, which are the marks of the Pleiades, Aquarius and Leo, which are marks of Atlantis, and
Cancer, and Capricorn, the mark of the crystal grid. If you have any one of those marks at galactic degree on your chart, then you have the rites of passage as a member of these soul groups. And please give us either a call or an email. And the email for this particular event is crystals, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-S, at starseedhotline.com. We do have a few spots open, but they are going fast, so we want to just get the groups formed and start that energy spinning. So they're coming up the first week of May and the third week of May. So that's all I wanted to say about that. And I think with that, we are going to sign off and thank everyone so much for joining us. Do remember to support the television show, Conspiracy Theory, by going to the truetv.com website if you like the show and you want to see more. So until next week, I thank you all for listening. On behalf of everyone here at Starseed Radio Academy, have a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.